Democracy Dies in Broad Daylight, go to CapitolHillCitizen.com. The producers of the Ralph Nader Radio Hour are Jimmy Lee Wirt, Anna Feldman, and Matthew Marin. Our executive producer is Alan Minsky.
Our theme music, Stand Up, Rise Up, was written and performed by Kemp Harris. Our proofreader is Elizabeth Solomon. Our social media manager is Stephen Wendt.
Join us next week on the Ralph Nader Radio Hour. Thank you, Ralph.
Thank you, everybody. A lot of Phil's programs led to congressional hearings. We will have a tribute to Phil Donahue in the next issue, the Capitol Citizen. If you want to get the new one just out, go to CapitolCitizen.com.
Dissent is very difficult in this country. We have a media which is rewarded by telling people what they want to hear. And that's not our job. We're not supposed to be popular. We're not supposed to be extolled as wonderful people who make us happy. We have to show the pain. And we are obliged to say what we feel about the decisions of powerful people.
This is John Crumshoe with a special Politics or Pedagogy Education Report, KPFK, now in our fund drive. Please make your contribution at 818-985-5735 or pledge online at kpfk.org. On the line is Eileen Proctor of Progressive Public Relations. Welcome to Politics or Pedagogy.
Thank you. Lovely to be here.
Very good to speak with you. You're in North Carolina. How is it that someone can learn from what they see in the media? Good news reporting versus propaganda.
It all depends on what you listen to. There's something that Kamala said that, you know, neighbors should not be enemies. And you have to be much more open to speaking with people who aren't on the same page with you. When I lived in Beverly Hills, Los Angeles, there wasn't any Trump people to be found. Here, it could become quite confrontational. So it's really quite the opposite. You have to grow in terms of outreach to people and overcome their prejudices and their shortcomings.
Now, if you have this kind of mentality and they don't, where do you go from there?
You cannot convert them. Trump is like an albatross around their neck that they won't let go of. And so if you need to find other commonalities, or bye-bye. They are quite intractable. You know, I was speaking to one recently that talked about how diplomatic Trump was. And my only mental associations were with Trump in England when he was with the Queen. And he looked like a beached whale in front of her. He was constantly going in front of her, preventing her walk. She almost stumbled over him. You know, and facts, whatever the facts are, and however blatant they are, however obvious they are, where there's no black and white, there's amnesia, what Gore Vidal called, you know, the great amnesia of the United States, Amnesia America.
On that note, Eileen Proctor, International Public Relations, I want to thank you very much for joining us on Politics or Pedagogy.
Thank you.
KPFK, now in our fund drive. Please make your contribution at 818-985-5735 or pledge online at kpfk.org.
Hello and welcome to Radio Intifada, a weekly review of politics and culture, bringing you the voices of the voiceless from Calcutta to Casablanca, here on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and 93.7 FM in Northern San Diego. as well as streaming worldwide on kpfk.org. Our shows can also be found as podcasts on Spotify, Anchor, Google Podcasts, Breaker, and Radio Public. My name is David Lloyd, and I'm a member of the South Asia, West Asia, and Northern Africa, or SWANA Collective, that brings you what's normally a weekly half hour of Radio Intifada. But today, we thank our friends at Middle East in Focus for donating their usual half hour to allow us a full hour of programming with a special guest who comes to us from this week's Democratic National Convention in Chicago. There, amidst all the enthusiasm and optimism on which Kamala Harris is riding high right now, large demonstrations took place inside and outside the convention to call not only for a ceasefire, but also for an arms embargo on Israel, in line with the Leahy Act, which banned sales of U.S. weaponry to states that are considered to have committed war crimes or violations of international humanitarian law. Few now doubt that Israel is plausibly engaged in genocidal acts, as the International Court of Justice and other institutions have affirmed. But before we go there, let me remind our listeners that our station, KPFK, in Los Angeles and serving all of Southern California, is continuing an urgent fund drive in order to survive what have been immensely challenging times for the station financially. KPFK is an invaluable public resource, especially for the progressive communities in this city and beyond, and especially in this election year. There are few radio stations in California or nationally that seek to offer such regular analysis and news about the critical issues that affect our communities as KPFK does every day of the year. It's because we accept no corporate sponsorship or advertising of any kind and do not trade our audience's personal data that we can bring you such a diversity of perspectives and insights that you're unlikely to hear anywhere else on your radio dial. But that means that this station, powered by the people, depends entirely on your donation to stay on air. Please consider donating during this fund drive, whatever you can, great or small, and if you can give more, you'll be helping others to access this invaluable public service at a time when many cannot contribute. So call 818-985-5735, that's 818-985-KPFK, during the show, or pledge at any time online at kpfk.org. For the cost of a single latte a month, you could donate $120 a year to KPFK, so think of sparing yourself one latte a week and you'll get there. Anyway, today, following on our conversation last week that previewed the Democratic Party's national convention and the plans within and outside the convention to demand a ceasefire and arms embargo on Israel, Radio Intifada will speak with Nadia Ahmad, a delegate against genocide, to get her assessment of how the convention played out with regard to Palestine and more generally U.S. foreign policy. Delegates Against Genocide, a coalition of delegates to the 2024 Democratic National Convention, or DNC, called for all delegates to vote no on the 2024 Democratic Party platform. The coalition objected to the platform's total failure to demand a permanent and sustainable ceasefire in Gaza, enforced by a U.S. arms embargo on Israel, and also later in the convention, to stage a protest on the convention floor to challenge the Harris campaign's obdurate refusal even to allow a single Palestinian speaker on the stage. As the delegates' press release stated, never again means never again for anyone, everywhere, period. Meanwhile, some 20,000 protesters marched on the streets of Chicago outside the convention and close to the United Center, where the tightly orchestrated spectacle of Kamala Harris's coronation was being held. Our guest today, Professor Nadia Ahmad, attended the convention and was one of the three delegates against genocide who dropped a banner calling for an arms embargo during Joe Biden's valedictory speech on Monday evening. Nadia Ahmad is Associate Professor of Law at Barry University in Florida and doing a PhD in Yale University's School of the Environment. Her research and scholarly expertise center on the intersections of energy siting, the environment, and sustainable development, drawing on international investment law and corporate social responsibility. She spent her academic career focusing on frontline communities that are most vulnerable to energy production. In addition to her position at Barry University, she's affiliate faculty at Harvard Law School's Institute for Global Law and Policy and at Rutgers University's Center for Security, Race, and Rights. A prolific scholar, she's published over 45 scholarly articles and book chapters that have appeared in leading journals and is co-author of the casebook Environmental Justice, Law, Policy, and Regulation in its third edition from Carolina Academic Press. Welcome to the show, Nadja. I'm honored to meet you. That was an extraordinary record that you have, and I only represented a small part of everything you've done. But let's focus on the Democratic National Convention for now. And as we expected, Kamala Harris gave a rousing message of unwavering support to Israel, including its right to self-defense, which only shows Harris's ignorance of international law, since as an occupying power, Israel has no right of self-defense against those whom it occupies. Meanwhile, although she also endorsed Palestinians' right to self-determination and lamented the horrific casualties of the current genocidal war, her campaign refused to allow a single Palestinian to speak. So, Nadja, I wanted to begin by asking you how you assess the impact of that astonishing negation of Palestinian simple humanity on the campaign itself, and especially in view of the powerful uncommitted movement. And maybe you can explain uncommitted to listeners who may not yet be aware of it.
Thank you. And I think it's important to see is that the growth of the uncommitted movement was largely organic. And as it grew, it was a group of delegates who had organized hundreds of thousands of people all around the country to gain delegate seats and traction within the DNC and to really elevate the issue of genocide as it was happening. And so something like this had never been done before in terms of being able to establish this level of delegation. But what's important to also notice is looking back at the history of the DNC and the selection of Chicago was a little bit unique because in 1968 there were protests and riots, and it really had an impact on the Democratic National Committee for about 10 years. And I think so this time there was a lot more control in terms of what had happened, and by selecting Kamala Harris as the nominee instead of going forward with President Joe Biden, that limited the number of protests that would have happened because they had seen that this was a movement away from Joe Biden. But still, I was disheartened that they weren't able to allow for the uncommitted movement's demand for a speaker to happen. But I also was not surprised by this move. In the time that I've had with the party for 3.5 years on the Democratic National Committee, and also from what I know of the history of the DNC, is that it would be a very difficult position for the DNC to admit to the genocide, to allow somebody to go on the main stage and do that. And so I felt that was why we actually decided to take the actions that we did, was because if they're not going to allow us to have what we want, then we should at least be able to have a say in the process.
Right. And do you think that this failure to allow a single Palestinian on the podium will encourage the uncommitted movement to continue the campaign to vote uncommitted rather than for, well, now it's Kamala Harris? Or do you think that people will now just fall in line and vote because that's the only alternative?
I mean, in some sense, there would be, are you going to hold your nose and vote for Kamala Harris because on the other side you have Donald Trump? I've seen voices both sides for and against. For example, there's some that have said that we didn't experience this type of killing under the Trump administration. Others have said that the Trump administration is very Islamophobic and will actually make things worse. And so that's why it's about choosing the lesser of the two evils. I think it's hard for me to speculate precisely what uncommitted would do, because I'm actually an automatic delegate, so I have a little bit more leeway in terms of how I decide, and that's why I felt I wouldn't have the any types of negative repercussions if I did hold up the banner and the sign.
Right. Well, speaking of holding up the banner and the sign, Let me just explain again that you were one of the three delegates who unfurled a banner, I think calling for ceasefire and arms embargo. Is that correct?
The banner simply said, stop arming Israel.
Yeah, okay. So arms embargo, really. But that is the way to get to a ceasefire. What happened? How did it go for you? And I was wondering, actually, if you were banned from the convention as a result of staging that protest.
Well, I think I wanted to clear some things up regarding the protest. We had been planning some type of disruption for months. We were going to do something. We weren't sure how or when or why and who was going to be involved. But we also knew that the number of people that would do it would be low, because it was fairly confrontational to be able to hold up a sign or hold up a banner in the middle of the primetime talks. And so that's why we decided that we wanted to, we wanted to take the more, the stronger approach when we were going to be doing that. And so the contingency we had, we were actually going to either have a banner that said ceasefire now or stop arming Israel. We decided to opt with stop arming Israel because we felt it was a stronger message. And we also didn't know if we were going to do a banner, if we were going to hold up signs. We felt holding up signs, we would need a larger amount of people to do that. And we realized we didn't have the number of people. The other two delegates who participated with me, one of them was Liana Sharon, who is also a DNC member automatic delegate. And the third person was Issam Boreya, who is a delegate from Connecticut and also a former political prisoner in Egypt. And so all of us were really invested in making sure that we did something that was very strong and powerful. There was also others that had participated in support for this action, but because of the pressure that they got within the party, they didn't feel comfortable really doing it in this prominent way.
Yeah. So in the upshot, I mean, what those of us outside the convention, just watching it, learned was that you were blocked by signs, and then there was this huge cheering. And that's all we really know, because, of course, you know, the cameras went off it fairly quickly, too, I think. So tell us what happened in the upshot. You were escorted out?
Liano was taken out with the police, but he wasn't really escorted. The reason he was taken out was because the reporters were trying to interview him, and then the other convention delegates didn't want to have that conversation happening as they were trying to listen to the president. And when we actually unfurled the banner, we thought it would be very quick, like security would come and take the sign away. But security actually never showed up. Just a few times the ushers came and kept handing out more vertical "We love Joe Biden" signs. And they were handing those out to block view of our sign, which they did a good job of. But they also passed some of those vertical "We love Joe Biden" signs to the back in the box office suites. Where there was labor union Leona that was right behind where we were seated as the Florida delegation. And that's where I think things became violent, was when members from that suite, and I remember as we were been sitting there for a long time, I actually wasn't worried about the people behind us because they were very drunk. Like I could tell like the way they were talking. And so I didn't really think of them as a threat, but we do know when people, get a little bit more inebriated than they should, it really makes them do some violent actions, and that's what happened. At least three of them hit me on the head with those "We love Joe Biden" signs, like quite aggressively, and then two more had like basically ripped the sign from our hands. And what's interesting is that when they first started doing this, I didn't know what was happening because the sign was so large, it basically, I couldn't see it in front of me. Like I was holding the sign up like above my head, just want to make sure people see the sign that we put all this effort and smuggling in. And Lauren Steiner, who had been a part of the 2016 disruption at the DNC, had helped paint and put together the sign and help with some of the coordination. And we thought, okay, they'll just take the sign away and that will be the end, 1 or 2 minutes. But it was a quite extended amount of time. And we had also notified the media that we trust in advance. So there was a number of cameras on it from different angles to cover the action. And at that point, Amy Goodman and Ryan Grimm also came up to the stands and were also filming it. And people from the Florida delegation were trying to block their camera access, even though they were members of the press. And so as the ushers were handing out more "We Love Joe Biden" signs, on the other side, you had the press that were filming it. And then in the back, unbeknownst to for those who were looking at it from the bottom, there was also people hitting us hitting me in the back, which was unique, because if you really want somebody to let go sign, you would hit the people on the corners. But the people on the corner were not wearing a headscarf. And so that's what was also kind of interesting to see that happen. As this extended on for quite some time, Liano Sharon was speaking to Amy Goodman and Ryan Grimm. They're asking questions, and as a result of that, people were also hitting Amy Goodman as well. And so when the person who was hitting Amy Goodman realized it was Amy Goodman, she became embarrassed. She's like, "Oh my gosh, I love you. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean that." Meaning that if it was somebody else, it would have been okay with hitting them.
If it was you, in other words.
Yeah. And so then they decided that by that time, two police officers had showed up. And then I don't remember this at the time, but then they're the ones who took Liano outside. And by this time, our sign had been snatched away. I remember Liano turning around and saying, "Give me back our property," which they didn't do. Yeah. And then Issam and I were just standing there at that point. And we listened for a few minutes more to Joe Biden's speech. And by that time, everything had kind of died away. And then we also decided, we might as well just walk out as well.
And let me just ask you, are you actually okay physically after that beating?
Yeah, well, I went to the doctor, and they said I was diagnosed with a concussion. So they did hit me very hard. And even my mother, who's a physician, she called me up very worried, because I didn't want to tell them right away about the action. They found out on their own through various sources. Yes. And they were like, "You were hit pretty hard. You need to go see a doctor. That's your brain is very fragile. And if people are hitting it around, it's like you're being jerked." And I had fallen down at one point, and then I had to stand back up. And I didn't think, I need to turn around and stop them from hitting me, because I thought, I didn't know what was happening. Like, I didn't know what they were hitting me with. Right. I only realized it after the fact. And there was nobody removed me or Issam from the floor. We just walked out on our own. And then the reason they removed Liano was so that the reporters could properly interview him.
Well, that's actually what I heard. And I'm very struck that most of the media spoke as if these were little demonstrations that were peacefully escorted out after the disruption and so forth. So it's important that we know what violence was inflicted on you, because that's usually something associated with Trump's rallies and not with the Democratic convention. But that brings me actually to ask you another question about the convention itself. I mean, the fact that they were handing out these signs so quickly in order to cover up your banner really is a signal of how tightly that convention was orchestrated. I mean, it sounds like every sign, every chant, every applause line was kind of prepared in advance and orchestrated so that there was no room, not even for disruption, but just even for dissent or difference of opinion. Was that your impression?
Yeah, and I also wouldn't say as if they tried to cover it up too fast, because they had been handing out signs all throughout that evening. And so this was just the final sign, was the vertical sign. I think they had handed out at least 3 to 4 other signs throughout the evening. Like, for example, when Jill Biden came, all the signs said Jill. When labor union folks came, there was labor signs as well. So that was happening throughout the evening. But when they saw this type of disturbance, they very rapidly put out more signs. And the easiest thing to do would have had security come and take the sign away, because it was considered to be something not welcome within the place. But that never happened. We weren't given an opportunity to have that happen. And what bothered me wasn't really even the people who were drunk and hitting us on the head, because one of them was Brent Booker, who was one of the speakers who had spoken.